June 21st, 1984. I'm Sophia Calver, and I'm interviewing Mr. Julius Rinko Sr. at the Eisenhower Center. What is your name?
Julius Rinko Sr.
What is your age and date of birth?
July 10, 1904.
How old are you?
Be 80 in another month.
Are you originally from Bridgeport?
What's that?
Are you originally from Bridgeport?
Yes, ma'am. I born here in Bridgeport on Hancock Avenue. Oh, you don't want to know that?
Yeah, go ahead. Say whatever you want. Where are you from?
Hancock Avenue in a basement flat.
Okay, can you describe yourself, your family?
Oh, yeah, we were three brothers and three sisters, mother and father, and from the basement flat, we moved to a 12-family tenement house on Spruce Street, which belonged to John Renchi, Sr. He was a saloon keeper. And we lived there. And there was 12 families, 12 Hungarian families, and in the 12 families, there was just, on each floor, was one toilet, no bathroom, big porch in the back, no porch, just downstairs. And there was 42 children that lived in that 12 family house. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. Across from St. Stephen's Church on Spruce Street. Mm-hmm. And next door was a Chinese laundry and then a butcher store. Mm-hmm. Across the street was another grocery store. And us children, we did not have any playground, so we played in the yard. Mm-hmm. Or our parents, there wasn't many no automobiles around, just horse and wagon. But we kept to ourselves. We listened to our parents. But we had wonderful places to play baseball and swimming, Sandy Bar, on the end of Boswick Avenue, which we call Sandy Bar. And across the way was Fairweather's Island and Seaside Park. So we had our own beach. And we had mixed immigrant families there with everyone had large family, many of children. And we had Jewish, Hungarian, Polish, Croatians, and Slovaks. And we all got together. We all went to Longfellow School. That was the only school that was there.
How about your religion?
My religion is Catholic. I belong to St. Stephen's Church across from where we lived. And these Jewish and other nationality boys, as we grew older, we made friends and we went to one another's home and we were invited and they treated us like human beings, you know, and we went to their synagogue and Protestant church, and they came to ours. I had Jewish boys, mm-hmm. Kaufman and Mellitz and Englander and...
How about your parents' background?
My parents...
Were they immigrants?
Yes, ma'am. They came to this country. Well, they were sponsored by his uncle, which had a saloon. And he came here I was born 1900.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they sponsored him in Bridgeport. And he stood here and he met my mother, and she had the 6 children.
What was life growing up? Was it hard, did you say, or easy?
No, it was wonderful. It was up to the, it was, we had plenty, there was not much money around, and work was scarce for my father. He worked for Malibu Lion and Crane Company, but he always had enough, you know, and to, as we moved out of this tenement house, he had a brother that was a carpenter contractor, and he built his own home, and he invited us to live there. But the children, you know, were too many for a 2-room and a in a kitchen. Didn't have no living room. They were bedrooms and the kitchen, and there too the outside the toilet was. When we took a bath Saturday night, they had to bring the big tub from the big zinc tub from the back porch hung down a hook.
Were you ever employed?
What?
Were you ever employed?
Oh yeah, but
what kind of job did you hold?
Well, when I was, let's see. We used to, you know, study at home, that when we went through our 8th grade when we were, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
From there, there was only one high school in Bridgeport. That was up here where the police station is, Congress High. And I walked with my graduating friends, buddies, from the West End down State Street and up Broad Street, up the steps here, to go to Congress High. And we had manual training and regular whatever subjects you took up, you know. So, well, I didn't stay, I only stood till I graduated. And then from there, there was work around. If you were no working papers, and you could get a job even if you were 10 years old, you know what? So the first job I had, we were going with 6 other friends of mine that lived in the area, and we chummed together. We went to what we call the playground, we used to call it the West Side. And as we were going by one noon hour by Ray Bestis' company on Broad Boswick Avenue, the foreman was sitting there, and he stopped us if we would like to have a job. So we thought he was kidding, you know. So he says, no, he says, just want to wait a little after lunch and we'll take you right in. So they hired the whole 6 of us, and they teached each one of us different things to do, because they made army belts and muskets and different things that the soldiers needed for World War I. So my job was, they had a big spools of yarn which they hung on a hook, and you had to get each yarn by itself, about 20-30 strings, and you put it in between nails and wires, and then you had to roll this onto another spool, and on this spool they took it and they put it in back of the weaving machine, and then they weave from that. They had the bobbins, you know.
How much were you paid?
You wouldn't believe it. $65 a week, and I was only 10 years old.
Yeah? Because I usually thought in those days it was...
That was a million. So, but we worked all day Saturday. That Saturday we done the cleaning, you know, from the wool and the yarn, this fuss comes, you know, it naturally hits the nail, you know, as it spins around the spool. So, and then the weaving machines, they too have this waste, like, you know, from the wool. So we used to go around with a broom and a hand brush and dustpan and a barrel and clean it up. That was extra.
I'm curious, what did you do with the money? Did you give some to your parents or did you...
I gave it all.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, she saved that for me. And she gave me... Well, $2 a week was a lot, big.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was ice cream sundae. Was just a nickel. Well, today you pay a dollar in friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
A big dishful with all the different kind of nuts and fruits and whipped cream and everything you could think of they put on. And besides, they gave you extra little, they call it a cherry smash. It was a little syrup and they put the seltzer in it, you know, with a fuzz at the... Because they had three spigots on the fountain. And so when armistice was called, we heard it in the shop, then everything shut down, just noon hour. The bells were ringing and everybody was screaming and parading around. Then we were all let out of our job.
But what? Why were you paid so much in the first place? Was it a hard job?
Yeah.
It was?
You know, and you worked 12, 14 hours a day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't allow that for children. So 6 days, 14, I almost put in 90 hours, you know.
How were the working conditions?
Very good. We had a wonderful foreman, Bill Craw, and he had one leg cut off, I don't know, in an accident or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he never bothered us, but if we wanted any information, he always was right there to tell us and explain what the work was and, you know, not to make no damage. So when that was over, we had so many different factories to go to. From there, I went to the toy factory on Holland Avenue. And over there, I was put in the shipping and packing department. But it was seasonal, you know. And you put them in cartons and put the cover on and seal them. Then I worked in a corset factory, La Resista, in the shipping room there too. And I was going to learn as a material cutter for corsets with the big electric knife, you know. You cut out, they put a form down, then you cut the form out. It was a very good job and very good paying.
How much was it?
They only paid about $1 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Was there any other types of jobs? There was only factory jobs and
that's
industrial?
All.
There was no, like, was there a lot of coastal jobs or civil service?
There was, but not for us. We were too young.
Yeah.
You know, there was so many factories, you know what I mean? From there, I went to American Fabrics. Over there, too, I worked in a shipping room. We used to take the Barnum and State bus, which stopped just right at the factory on Connecticut Avenue. And that too was, I don't know, the orders didn't come in. And so they let us go. No, first they let one, they kept me and they let my friend go. And I says, I wouldn't come to work here all alone. I says, I want him to stay. We can't keep two of you. So I says, well, then I'll quit, you know, and yeah. From there, I went to Columbia Records on Hancock Avenue. I had got a wonderful job as a carpenter's helper, making boxes which they shipped the records out in, see? And then they were teaching me to, on the big saw, to cut splinters of wood that was put on the box, on the sealant, you know, on the side that the box would hold the records. That there, then that.
What would you say were the major industries and factories that were the biggest?
The
biggest ones.
All was Meldable Iron, Crane Company, Singers, Columbia Records, Bassick.
How about the brass?
What?
Was the brass company big?
Oh yeah, brass and Bullards. I even worked there when it was on Broad Street. I was an apprentice learning to be a machinist. But then when I learned it, you couldn't get a job for no money. There was too many machinists, and the work wasn't there for machinists, you know what I mean? Then they started learning the screw machines. Yeah. Then we had Max Sam's. I worked there.
Uh-huh.
No, I worked in when I worked in the Columbia Records on Hancock Avenue. I had a French boss, LaFay, Mr. LaFay. He says, you don't want this job. He says, you go up in the shipping room. And up there I met Mr. Lincoln. He showed me the different things, how to pack to ship out of the state and ship to the other factory on Barnum Avenue. See? So the factory was getting a slow down. So then the carpenter boss took me in to learn as an apprentice. And everybody was getting laid off, the whole shop. My friends used to come and say, what are you staying for? No, and my boss wouldn't let me go. He was going to teach me the carpenter work. And he made me even toolbox, you know. And finally the factory moved and I had to leave.
Let's talk about the Depression. How did it affect your family and other families?
Well, during the Depression, I worked for the boarding company delivering milk. And when the Depression came, I worked from 24 till 40. And then I worked there, and we had a new bank opened in the West End on State Street. We used to call it the West Side Bank. And I saved, I was making good money then too. I had a good route and I made commission plus a salary of $37.50 a week plus 4% commission, which they paid you once a month. So that all you needed them days was about $10 a week and you could live like a king.
Mm-hmm. Did it hit you hard? So you were pretty
no,
well off?
I didn't lose any time, no work at all, because I had to deliver the milk to food. But as things went along after 29, money was tight, and we had to be very careful of where we gave credit on the route, on the books, and the company. And many a times I put myself in a jam, as I would go over to a home to collect for the weekly milk, and then there was the children, and we were supposed to, the company gave me orders, they stamped the book, that I should shut them off because they had too much credit, which they think they can't pay and they won't be able to pay. So I felt bad, and they told them to go on the city. But as I used to come every week and collect, she was very good, and the rest of the people, these four children, they weren't even school age, and they were crying. They want milk, milk, milk. And I continued to leave it out of my own money. So I couldn't do it for too many, but I did it. I felt so sorry. But later on, I got that money back from the people, you know.
What kind of relief programs were offered?
What?
Relief programs.
Relief?
Yeah, what kind were offered for them? Any programs to help them out?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Us teenagers, we suffered. We didn't even have no, we only had one boys club, and that was on Middle Street. And we lived in the West End, and we didn't even have a shack. Only later on, they put one on State Street where you could go. But the Bridgeport Public Library, that time it was on Main Street, was the most wonderfulest thing that the city gave for anybody that wanted to study and read, even
also,
if you...
I meant the people who were sick, like you told us, the people who were like, the kids were crying and the families who got hurt by the depression. Did the government do anything to help them?
Oh, yeah. The city or the state gave the money, and they signed up, and they went to the public school that was nearest to them, which they belonged, mm-hmm. and they received a box which had milk, beans, cereal, you know, all these things that you need, and the vitamins. So as long as the work picked up, yeah.
Was religion important to the family?
Oh, yeah. That's the most important. Your mother would see the first thing that she had the clothes ready and made sure you dressed up and you made sure you had nice clothes and your hair was clean, and that you went every Sunday to your children or grown-up mass.
Mm-hmm.
And even a penny in the basket donation was large. You know what I mean? So,
what morals did the family hold?
What?
Morals or beliefs did the family hold? About, like, did they think they should be strict with their children? They think that they should be lenient with their children?
Oh, yeah, well,
they believe in?
Oh, no. One thing in our family was, our father never put a hand on us, but my mother, with her voice, you know, when she said something that we done wrong and we didn't correct it or you didn't listen to her, well, she was the one that punished. And my father never interfered, and every one of the families in the same thing in the West End, there was nobody that was arrested. We had one policeman, and he knew everybody in that district, what we called Hungtown, you know?
Was there a lot of segregation?
What?
Segregation.
Oh.
Was there a lot of immigrants? Were there a lot of blacks? Like, did you mix together, or?
Never had a black.
Never?
Never had a Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
No. We had all the churches gave dances and bazaars.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And picnics. And the church bought their own picnic ground out in the country where there would be some trees and bushes and flowers. You know, more country-like. And now everything was, the different nationalities all got together. No fights and nothing. No.
How large was the average family? Like, how many kids did it have?
Six was the smallest.
Six.
We had 8, 10, 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that same school stood in that district.
Did your family have a car or radio or TV?
No, not till 1924, when I was working, before I got married, my dad bought, well, it was 3 boys and 3 girls. So the cars were coming out then, you know, different people who could afford it would buy a car. So he bought a Studebaker touring car from H.L. Mills on Purple Avenue. He was the sales showroom. And he paid $1,300 for a 1940 Studebaker, no, yeah, 1940 Studebaker. No, I got married in the 26, before that.
Mm-hmm.
1924 Studebaker touring car. Oh, and we kept it like a gold piece. He built a garage for it, and in the winter you had to inflate your tires because you had tubes and you would get the creepers the next, you know, they would dry out like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took your battery out and you bought it in the house and you added the water to it. Next spring you put it in, you know. And used to have the post road then. If you went for a ride and they had trap rock, that sharp rock. And when I was, oh yeah, I was the only one that was allowed to drive it, but my brothers learned from me. And they used to take it once in a while, but my father didn't like the way they drove it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my father let me take it when I was engaged to my wife, and we took a ride just to go to South Norwalk. And I got 12 flat tires. And that time, the post road from Bridgeport, or even New Haven, all the way to Stamford in New York, was lined with gas stations, and they fixed your flats free, even if you bought any gasoline or not.
Mm-hmm.
And gasoline was selling then 12 gallons for a dollar. And if you had your regular gas station, like here, the Mirrored gas station on Main Street, it was a corporation, you know, like Nobile and them. If you bought the gasoline there, they gave you a card and they punched it, and then they change your oil or change your tires free, you know, and they gave you a change of oil in the car.
How were women discriminated against?
What?
How were women discriminated against?
No.
Were they ever?
No. Sometime there'd be a friction, like before they came here, see, they had a sweetheart in the old country, like Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally the man, sweetheart, he came here to America to, you know, to make something of himself, because there was nothing doing in Hungary. It was just, you know, you worked for the rich people over there, you know, like the dukes and the lords and all them. And all they gave you was enough to eat, you know, corn and wheat and vegetables. And maybe you had a suit of clothes which you wore to a funeral and a church. And
were women, were they ever discriminated against? Like, women are supposed to be in the house and they're supposed to have a career.
Not a woman, it'd be an older girl, you know.
She didn't get a job because she was a woman.
No, you could have got all the jobs you want. And the best part is then that they gave you an hour lunch at noon hour. You could go home, your home was near, And if you had to change yourself or anything, you know, and it was in the summer, hot like now, change your clothes or your underwear, you know, and go back. And at the same time, you would meet your friends on the corner and make your dates where, which house you're going, and then go into the factories.
What kind of ghettos did Bridgeport have?
No ghettos.
No ghettos? What kind of jobs were offered to immigrants? Did they get the same jobs?
No, well, they all had hard labor work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We had Malleable Iron here and Crane Company, and my dad worked at the furnace, you know, where they, Kuglo, where they poured out the brass and the copper to make valves, which the Crane Company was noted for, you know, water valves and gas valves. And then the other one was the same thing, Malleable Iron. Well, the immigrants all had a job, but bad times were coming too, you know. Mm-hmm. Like when McKinley was president for about 6 months, it was bad, very bad. You had to cut down on the food, you know. My father, we used to go, when March 20 came, we couldn't wear our shoes only on Sunday. Mm-hmm. We went barefoot, and the climate was way different then. You know what I mean? You never caught cold, and the only thing, when September came, to go to school, your shoe wouldn't fit because your feet flattened out, mm-hmm. and for a while it would pinch. You know, and my father used to tap our own shoes. He used to repair it himself. Every other night he'd be down the cellar. Take this one, take the others, you know. We didn't scuff it around or hit it against anything to do any damage to our shoes like today. They'd say, oh, you could buy it anytime you want it. But them days you couldn't.
In Bridgeport, what was the family's view on marriage? Did they...
A what?
The family's view on marriage. How did they hold marriage?
Very good. Never had no divorce.
Yeah.
Nobody interfered in other people's family.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Children? Did they have a lot of children?
Oh, we were loaded with children. When I was a teenager, I went, there was so many girls that their mothers were glad to, they were noted to Hungarian people to make nice cakes, delicacy, and you know, and we had ginger, you know, they made their own soda then, you know, and nice cakes, and then they would invite it, and whoever could afford would have a player piano, you know, one of them with the roll. And we'd go over, and we'd start Friday night, and then all Sunday, you know. And the girls, my wife too, used to belong to the church choir, and they used to have practice for the choir, and then us boys would meet them near the church. And the parents were very strict. When you took your...
Mm-hmm. Were they strict on dating?
Very strict.
Like, but they let the girls go date and the boys go date?
No, they wanted to know. They knew, but they wanted to know the boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
How old?
They heard if he was a little rough or a little loud mouth. Well, then they were very careful. And the parents were very strict, and you had to be home the time the parents told you. If you didn't, your girlfriend would get her hair pulled. There were a nice slap in the face.
How old were they when you started dating or started going out?
About 15, 16.
Did they have
it was
a
just that.
A chaperone.
Well,
did they have chaperones in those?
No, you'd have a girlfriend would come. A girl was a friend of the girl you took out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she was a chaperone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And one time I married her, I was going with my wife,
mm-hmm.
And we went, we went on Main Street to the burlesque show. And her parents never allowed that. Mm-hmm. So we stood a little late. We stood, the show didn't end till 11 o'clock. And by the time we took the trolley home on Main and State, and it stopped by Harvey Hubble. Then too, we had to walk about 5 blocks to the house. It was after midnight, and her father was waiting already in the hall. You know, I didn't even get a chance to escort her in the hallway, because then the hallway, and she told me the next day she got a nice slap in the face and her mother pulled her hair. But she survived.
Was housing in your community adequate? Did you have good housing, or did it include?
Cold water flats. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
No, I have to explain.
That, with no furnace. Mm-hmm. But you had coal brought up by the coal man. We used to have big coal bins on the back porch. And used to put a ton of coal in there. And then you had 2-3 pails, and us boys had to make sure that we bought the coal in the kitchen, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's everything, fruit, vegetable, meat, everything came in wooden cartons, not like cardboard today, you know. And then you'd go around, the storekeeper would put it out, or you'd go and shop there. They would give you a box or, you know, or a barrel that the apples and oranges came in. And you'd bring it home and you'd chop it up. And then there was wooded areas there where you went down and you could have chopped tree down, dry it out, that would last longer, like what a log is today, you know. And the people used to have goose down quilts, you know what I mean? And only when it was zero weather or very cold did they have the stove fire on. Otherwise it was always shut off. And then your dad went to work, 5 o'clock he'd get up, and the grocery and butcher stores were open. There was no icebox or refrigerators around. You had to depend upon your storekeeper and butcher to have your meats and vegetables over there, you know, chilled. They had ice boxes. And then he went down and he got whatever. Then days, you for 50 cents, you went down, you bought a dozen eggs, a pound of bacon, a pound of butter, 2-3 dozen rolls, and you even got change back. And he used to eat a piece of steak before he went to work.
If you had a choice to live in the past in which you grew up or now, which would you take? Would you like to live now, like grow up here in the present, or where you grew up?
When I grew up.
Yeah, you would like to be there, right? And okay, tell us why.
Well, I'll tell you why. It was much clean living, you know what I mean? People weren't out to go against you, whatever you made. And if you wanted to be something, you went out to learn, and you know. But a working man, an immigrant, had a very slim chance of ever getting into Yale or Harvard or anywhere, or even being a lawyer or a doctor or anything like that. It was mostly the Jewish people that sacrificed and seen that their children, and they pushed them and they made sure that they went to school and prep school, then to college. We had one Jewish boy there, Judge Mellitz, that lived in the West End. His parents were immigrant Jewish boys, and he made a career out of him today. I know he saved our bank, the West Side, because during the Depression, the banks were closing up. I remember I had $2,000 saved, and they told me that it would be lost, but he seen that it wasn't lost, and they gave us shares. You know, they reorganized, and then as business picked up after the Depression, the bank getting in money, and you could have cashed in your bonds or stocks and get your money back, which he done wonderful, you know. Today, I guess he's retired, and he got a big honor from the state and the country for what he'd done. And the living was altogether better, more clean. You had more fun. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You didn't have to be afraid. You, on a Sunday, you'd walk down to State Street, and you had the trolley cars, the open trolley cars with the running board on the steps on the side, and for a nickel you rode all the ways to Milford, to Walnut Beach. What more you want? Mm-hmm. And then for another, if you had a quarter or a dime, you could spend the whole afternoon, because a hamburger was two hamburgers for a nickel. And you could, the soda was one penny. And you could have drank all the chocolate and all the milk you wanted for 2 cents. You know what I mean? They stare ripped it up. And nobody bothered you. Nobody robbed you. You know, you could put your pants, you go bathing, and you would put your pants down even on Seaside Park before they had the bathing house. Nobody touched anything. It was clean living. Today, it's bad.
We're coming to a close to our interview. I'd just like to thank you for your
knowledge
of the past.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.